You're listening to 91.3 FM KUAF in Fayetteville, a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. And this is Ozarks at Large for Friday, July 9th, 2021. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Ahead this hour, we talk with Janelle George, the Illuminating Black Lives Fellowship recipient at the Writers' Colony at Dairy Hollow in Eureka Springs. She's conducting a writing workshop at the Fayetteville Public Library tomorrow. Plus, Crystal Bridges turns 10, and the museum is celebrating with a new exhibition. After today's show on Science Friday, we look back with Pulitzer Prize-winning author John McPhee about his love affair with America's rocks. That's on the next Science Friday, today at 1 on 91.3. More than 1,000 Arkansans have tested positive for COVID-19 for the second day in a row. The Department of Health announced 1,210 new cases in its latest report. Active cases have increased by 740, and 11 more Arkansans have died from the virus. This is Ozarks at Large, and joining me now from his office in Fort Smith is Michael Tilley with Talk Business and Politics. How are you? Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. Those are always words that go well together. Happy Friday.
Absolutely. And words that go well together whenever I talk to you are building permits. You're very good at keeping up with these numbers. So tell me where we are right now. Give me an update.
Well, we are in the Fort Smith Metro. We measure building permit values in Fort Smith, Greenwood, and Van Buren, three of the largest cities. So it's a majority of the total permit activity. It's not all of it, but a clear majority. But through the first 6 months of the year, building permits are down 5.5%. They total about 158 million for the three cities. Now, we have to keep in mind that's off of what was a record pace last year. Now, I know that it seems odd the region would set a record pace during a pandemic year,
right?
But it did, because those three cities combined for just a little under $265 million, which was up 9.5% over 2019. And 2019 was a pretty solid year, too. So the region's coming off 2 to 3 pretty solid year, so it's not a surprise to see a little bit of a downturn. You've also got an increase in a lot of commodities that are used in the housing industry, for example, lumber prices. So there may have been a slowdown there. But in June, the building permit values for the three cities were down 22%. Fort Smith, their permit values for the first 6 months of the year are down 8.5%. In Greenwood, they're down for the first 6 months, down just a little 1.3%. Van Buren's kind of the star of the show. Their permits are up a little over 24% for the first half of the year. So Van Buren's trying to hold its own. It's the other two cities that are slackers, so to speak. But we still got 6 months. It may pick up in the back half of the year. We're hearing anecdotally that some of the prices are coming down, not all, but some of them are starting to come back down. So we'll see. And the interest rates are expected to stay low. So that always fuels building, both residential and commercial.
Well, we'll definitely keep an eye on that. While we're talking about building new things, let's talk about an expansion. Harry G. Barr and Company, they're starting a $10 million expansion. Now, I have to admit, this is a company that I wasn't familiar with.
Yeah, they are. They do fly under the radar a little bit, although they're one of the oldest manufacturing companies in Fort Smith. But they are, as Michael Barr, president of the company, said, they're tapped out. They are needing more space, more employees. You know, part of the demand nationwide for new housing and for new commercial projects is causing a lot of these suppliers to not be able to keep up with demand. They brand their products under Weather Bar windows and doors. They've begun on a three-phase process. They're going to build a new parking lot. I drive by their facility every once in a while, and they definitely need a parking lot. They have folks parked in the grass in some areas, but they're building a new parking lot with a new entrance and exit for the facility. That's the first phase. The second phase, which will follow soon after, Will be more office space, new employee break room, and about 18,000 square feet for what they call outbound distribution. That's really dock space. When they get products finished, they can get it organized there to be delivered out to where it's been ordered. And then after that, there will be on the books is a planned 50,000 square foot space. Right now, they've got that planned for raw material storage, but depending on the orders coming in and where they are then, it could be used for other purposes, either production or other purposes. So, but they are struggling to keep, it's a good problem for them to have. You know, they've got more orders than they can handle. So they're trying to essentially make hay while the sun shines, so to speak.
A headline that caught my attention this week at talkbusiness.net is apparently I have the opportunity to bid on West End Park in downtown Fort Smith. It's going to be sold at auction.
Yeah, and I can just see Antoinette down there running the Ferris wheel. That'd be great.
Yes, because I have a giant wallet. But tell me about this for folks that do have the means to potentially bid on this.
Yeah, I think most folks in the Fort Smith area are familiar with the park at West End. It's got the large Ferris wheel you see coming in over the bridge or leaving. It's got the vintage carousel. And the Ferris wheel was first used at the World's Fair in San Diego in 1935. It's made in Italy, so it's a classic.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's a classic Ferris wheel. And they've got a old Pullman dining car in the park that's used for a restaurant. So it's a great space. I have been there 1,000 years ago when I used to go to these birthday parties for young kids, including mine. There used to be a lot of birthday. It's a great setting for birthday parties, for events, for corporate events, that kind of thing. But Phil White, who has owned that for a long time, he's sold another business. I think he's just ready to get out of the business world and kick back. And so he's put it up for auction, and it goes up for auction on August 12th. And it's an absolute auction. So whatever the highest bid is they will own the park. Now, the only caveat to the auction is they have to keep it operating as a park for 10 years after the deal closes. And then I guess after that, they can do whatever they want to, but that's the deal, that the only caveat that Phil has put on. But Looper Auction Realty is going to handle this. They've told us they don't have an estimated sale for the park, but he did say there's been a lot of interest in it. Phil White says he's invested a little over $1 million in it. I don't know if they'll get that, but it'll be interesting. I just, you know, the hope is that a lot of folks in the region really hope it gets a good owner that's going to keep it going clean. Phil White's done a good job. He turned it over to the city of Fort Smith some time back. The Parks Department has just said that they're having a difficult time keeping it staffed and keeping it open. So they're going to turn it back over. And that's also what precipitated this auction.
Well, Michael, thank you as always. And I hope you have a great weekend.
You as well, Antoinette. Always good to talk to you.
You too. Michael Tilley is with Talk Business and Politics. You can find out more at talkbusiness.net.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. The inaugural Ozark Beer Company Cardboard Regatta is July 25th at Lake Atalanta in Rogers. Teams and onlookers are invited to participate in the over-the-top spectacle. Prizes will be awarded. Proceeds benefit the Rogers Public Educational Foundation. OzarkBeerCompany.com/regatta for registration, rules, and more.
Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art is celebrating its upcoming 10th anniversary with the new exhibition Crystal Bridges at 10, which makes its public debut Sunday. The immersive exhibition contains 10 distinct art experiences. During a virtual media preview this morning, co-curator Mindy Besaw said guests will see familiar works from the museum's collection as well as new acquisitions.
There is really something for everyone in this exhibition. The scope is 200 years of art.
Community members are being incorporated into the exhibition as well. In the Community Champions section, photographs of local residents who Besaw says have held up the community will hang alongside works of art like Norman Rockwell's Rosie the Riveter. In the self-portrait section, co-curator Lauren Haynes says guests will see self-portraits submitted by local K-12 students.
And what we received were over 500 submissions that really show just how many amazing young artists are in our community. And what we did, we picked 24 of these to be on view in person in the exhibition, but all of them will be playing on a screen as well in the exhibition. So this is an opportunity for young artists in our region to see themselves literally in the museum alongside some really great works of art that some, like I mentioned, haven't been seen and others people will be very familiar with.
The temporary exhibition gallery was recently expanded to include an additional 2,200 square feet and now has a total of 10,000 square feet. Crystal Bridges at 10 will be the first temporary exhibition to include the additional gallery space.
We're really trying to have a variety of experiences that all very much talk about aspects of the work that we've done at Crystal Bridges, the work that we need to do at Crystal Bridges, the work that we'll continue to do at Crystal Bridges.
Crystal Bridges at 10 will be on view Sunday through September 27th. Timed tickets are available for $12, and admission is free for members, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program participants, veterans, and youth ages 18 and younger. The museum has welcomed nearly 5.5 million visitors from around the world since opening on November 11th, 2011. More information is available at crystalbridges.org. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Janelle George is spending a couple of weeks at the Writers' Colony at Dairy Hollow in Eureka Springs, working on essays about her experiences. George, who is the Illuminating Black Lives Fellowship recipient at Dairy Hollow, is an associate professor of law at Georgetown University. Tomorrow, she'll lead a workshop at the Fayetteville Public Library called Story as Memorial, Writing to Remember. During a conversation this week in Eureka Springs, Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums asked her about that workshop, which she's presenting in collaboration with the Washington County Community Remembrance Project.
I did a little bit of digging on their website and realized that they are working to establish a memorial to three young black men who were lynched in the 1800s. And I was just really struck by that and the significance of memorials. And if we look at the past year of racial reckoning and some of the tearing down of memorials, and what do those mean? What do memorials mean to people? And then I was thinking, how can I connect this with writing? But we also essentially memorialize people and events and experiences through writing as well. And particularly the Black community has such a strong oral history. Story truly can be memorial.
When did you first think about writing and what inspirations have you had?
Oh, wow. I've always thought about writing, even as a young child. So my mom is a librarian, and I remember, so I draw and write. And so when I was, I want to say third grade, I always wrote stories, and I would write these stories about my classmates, and they always loved them, and they would kind of ask me, hey, can you write a story about me or write a story about this person? So I had about like three or four stories that I would like staple together, and I created what I thought was a library on the side of my desk, and my classmates would literally come by my desk, and this was back in the day when you had to check, and check out my books and like return them back to the little pocket. And so I've always been a writer, and I was really inspired by Beverly Cleary, who just passed away this year, and Judy Blume, and those writers of like the 80s and, you know, my childhood. And they wrote stories about everyday life that just really struck me.
That had to be quite a thrill to have your peers, your classmates come by and check out your books.
You know, actually, it's funny because I haven't thought about that in so long, but it was just natural. It just felt natural to me. Like, this is what I was doing. I loved writing. And at my school, I grew up in Seattle, and the school I went to always emphasized the arts. And so we would have writers come in and talk to our class. I remember actually when Beverly Cleary came, and she held up these, because she hand wrote, she drafted some of her early stories, and I remember her holding up this legal paper and saying this was an early draft of one of my books, and that just stuck with me.
So how did writing and love of writing translate into studying law?
You know what it actually did? So I was an English major in undergrad, and because it was a historically black college, there was a lot of emphasis on black women writers. all kinds and genres. I remember I took an honors philosophy class, and you know, we read what everyone else reads in their philosophy classes, but we also read Black Feminist Thought by Patricia Hill Collins. And I was introduced to Toni Cade Bambara and Audre Lorde. And those writers, again, just spoke from authentic experiences that really resonated with me. And so, yeah, I just carried that with me. And in law school, it's interesting because I see cases, you look at a case, it's essentially a story, right? Someone's going about their day, they go into the supermarket, they happen to slip on a banana, and then, you know, then the law comes in, right? But these cases are essentially stories. And so that's how I view the law as well. We're telling stories, and through judicial opinions, I think in response, we're also getting an idea of, okay, what are some of our boundaries and parameters in our society as well? And what kind of narrative, public narrative, are we telling through these legal opinions?
You're here for 2 weeks. I don't know if you can have a plan for when you have an opportunity like this, but what do you hope is accomplished by the end of the 2 weeks?
I want to do, so my ultimate goal is to do a book of essays, personal essays, just about my experiences working on civil rights issues, my experience just as a Black woman in this country, just reflections and stories. But I'm trying to manage my expectations for the 2 weeks I get, that I can't do a full book of essays. So at least tweaking a couple of drafts that I already have, working on a couple of others, and then just outlining and thinking through maybe a couple more.
What would be an example of an experience that you would write about in an essay?
Wow. So one essay that was actually published, but I would still like to have as part of this collection. It seems like such a mundane experience, but it really just triggered so much in terms of my own memories. I live in Washington, D.C., and I take a kind of tunnel system to get from the train to the building where I live. And so I'm walking through these tunnels, and they have like little tourist shops and things like that. And there were some tourists in the tunnel, and I remember the father was quite loud, and I assumed it was a family, a father, and I assumed this figure was the father who, and there were about teenage, I think, age children, and he looked, I'll never forget, he kind of looked back at me and saw me, and I was just maybe a few steps behind them. And I remember, and so this was a few years ago, around 2016-ish, 2017, and I remember him saying, yeah, that's why that kid was killed. It was non-compliance. And I don't even know if he used the word, said the name Trayvon Martin, but he said enough to let me know that's what he was talking about. And then he said very loudly, I teach my kids to comply with the police so that there are no, they don't have any problems. And he presented as white. I assumed that he was white. And normally I don't respond to things like that, or I know that when, especially when people are loud like that and they're, you know, they're kind of looking to engage you, and it can get very negative very fast. But at the time I had just been working as an attorney with the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, and I had traveled out to Ferguson after the killing of Mike Brown. And I had actually met Trayvon Martin's parents and heard them speak. They were sharing about the book they wrote about the trial and their experience. And I couldn't be silent. And I said, it's not about compliance. You can comply, and it doesn't matter. And by the way, the man who killed him was not a police officer. He was not an official person. And you know, I remember the guy kind of, you know, kind of was just pulled back a little bit. And then he said, well, you know, I don't agree with that. And I know. And somehow he brought up this the fact that he had served his country. And he said that I'm a good American. I served my country. And I said, well, my father was a U.S. Marine. He served his country as well. And I know other Black people who likewise did. And at that point, an older woman who was with him intervened and started yelling at me and gesturing wildly. And I just remember it just brought up so much of those years and the killings and thinking about these young men, thinking about how Michael Brown's body laid in the street for hours after he was killed, thinking about Trayvon's parents and when they were talking about identifying his body at the morgue, how his leg was twisted underneath his body because he had been struggling underneath this man who shot him in the chest. And it all just came up for me. And somehow I kept walking. I turned the corner. I saw this woman standing there, a complete stranger. I have no idea who she was. And I just started crying. And I said, you know, some people don't see us as human beings. And this stranger just embraced me and hugged me and was just very comforting. And she just kept saying, I know, I understand. And she was a Black woman as well. I have no idea how much time actually passed. I looked up, the family was nowhere in sight. This woman gave me her name and her cell number and said, you know, be careful getting home. Let me know you made it back safely. And so she left. I went home, which was only a couple more minutes, and looked her up by her name. Turns out she was this decorated Secret Service agent. And I always wondered if she had been there kind of watching as this exchange had taken place. But I was so thankful for just her presence and her comfort and acknowledging that pain. And one thing I wrote in that essay was I said, I had been mourning without even realizing it. Like I had been hearing about these deaths of these young Black men and, it, you know, just not realizing what I had been carrying with me until it became triggered by that exchange with that man in the tunnel.
Janelle George is the recipient of the Illuminating Black Lives Fellowship from the Writers' Colony at Dairy Hollow in Eureka Springs. Tomorrow's workshop, Story as Memorial, Writing to Remember, begins at 2 p.m. at the Fayetteville Public Library. Registration is full, but you can join a waitlist at faylib.org. Janelle George spoke with Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums this week in Eureka Springs.
It was loggers versus environmentalists.
Buried right up to his neck in a barricade of boulders, and that is what held off that front-end loader.
Inside the Timber Wars on the next Reveal.
Listen Sunday afternoon at 2 on 91.3. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. On July 16th, Pat Ryan Key is releasing a new 4-song EP called New Old Stock. Last week, I met up with Pat at Meteor Guitar Gallery in Bentonville to discuss his latest project. To begin the conversation, he told me how the pandemic had impacted his life over the last year.
It was pretty crippling at first, and I decided to turn the situation around and use it in my favor. Despite all the people who went through the hard times, I saw it as an opportunity for myself personally, and I started to write and record some demos, and I had been working at Big Adventure Studios in Rogers, and we had a year-long project, and circumstances presented themselves, and it kind of put everything on hold. And so I had this song that I was sitting on, and I decided to make a demo for it, and I reached out to Neil Greenhaw, the owner of Haction Road Studios.
Mm-hmm, in Bentonville.
Mm-hmm. And he invited me in. We took a listen, and he was like, let's chase this. I like what you got. And so we went for it. What started with a vocal and acoustic guitar turned into this full production, and he's got a real professional crew there, and we hired some guns, and we went in there and just knocked it out in a day, and it was really exciting because all up until that point, recording was kind of a stressful thing, you know. But there it was with such ease. I remember at the end of the day, I was just kind of lost in space, and Neil came up to me, like, "What's wrong?" And I'm like, "I'm just not used to this being so comfortable. You know, this was a really enjoyable process." And so what started with one song ended up turning into four, and I got addicted to that. That's how what originally wanted to be was just a songwriter and a record producer. And so the second song just popped in my head one day driving home. It was crazy. The melody and the rhythm just was in my mind, and I was like, man, I had to like pull over and record in my little phone so I wouldn't forget it, you know. So that was really fun. So again, I was just still at the time chasing singles and stuff because that's kind of what the market is now. And but the same thing, first time it kind of paralleled. It was a really enjoyable process. Things was just natural. It was really organic, and I was like, man, I think I ought to do this one more time. And but I took it for granted because the first two kind of fell in my lap, but the last two songs, those were really a big challenge. So I spent maybe 3 to 4 months crafting each one, and they went through 6 or 7 different versions, different keys, different tempos, and I finally settled on 2 final ones, and we decided to bang those out as well. And so it started as one song, over the course of the year it turned into 4, and it was awesome. I really feel like I was right where I needed to be, and they took their time with me and they believed in me, and it was really awesome to get to experience that and kind of do what the pros used to do. You know, that's what Stevie Wonder did with Motown, and Wilson Pickett did with Muscle Shoals, Alabama, and Fame. So it was really cool to get to experience that and not necessarily count myself along with those types of characters, but at least to know how they did it was very enjoyable.
Very cool. So the result has been this 4-song EP that's mm-hmm. coming out on July 16th.
Yes, ma'am.
What's the name?
So this will be called New Old Stock.
Tell me about the name.
So, I mean, I'm an old soul. I definitely appreciate music of the past as opposed to today, although I do like some contemporary artists like Leon Bridges and mm-hmm. Chris Stapleton.
But they have that kind of old feel to them,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So I'm really thankful for that because there's actually this new trend that's coming up called retro pop.
Yes.
And I was really excited because I didn't know that at the time. So that's the kind of thing, stars align, I guess, if you mm-hmm. want. So that's kind of where my mindset was. It's like, here's some new music, but it's got an old flavor, you know. And just still kind of chasing that little dream there.
Yeah, well, it seems to be going well for you. I'm trying Thanks. To think one of the songs. Messed Up is a good one. It's definitely very bluesy. Is that fair to say?
Oh yeah, I mean that's pretty much been the general feedback. A lot of soulful, or a lot of people have been saying gospel, and
okay.
You know, even though it's non-secular,
right?
There's definitely the overtones of that faith. Going back to my health scare, you know, that
right.
that really made me get my priorities straight and stuff, and I feel like he has a lot to do with that. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. For our listeners who don't know, a few years ago you were diagnosed with a very rare cancer.
Yeah, it was wild.
And here you are, so
5 years later.
Yeah,
just shy of 5 years, but
right,
doesn't feel like it's been that long. I'm finally back 100% health.
Congratulations.
It's awesome.
Yeah, that's great.
It took about twice as long as the healthcare professionals suggested, and so it was a little frustrating, you know, but no complaints, you know.
Sure. Well, but I think that's understandable too, because you know, with it being rare, but also a brain tumor of sorts, you know, anything that affects neurological things is always a little more difficult and complicated.
Yeah, because it was right on my central nervous system where the tumor was.
Mm-hmm.
So the surgeons were really nervous, you know.
Absolutely.
One, they didn't know if they could take all of the cancer out because it was on an artery. And luckily, my brain killed the artery and regrew veins around it. So they were able to remove it all in full. And then they were saying, well, if you survive the surgery, there's a 50-50 chance. Then they went on and said, well, this could be a life-altering operation. And so I just, you know, at that point, I wasn't thinking about anything else but just staying positive.
You bring up the positivity. You are a very positive person. And I thought that that came through in your song, Focus.
Right. Now, that was a very interesting track because during the pandemic, you know, a lot of companies had to downsize. And unfortunately, my wife was a victim of that. And I still remember the day her superior called, and it was a very emotional time. And but that actually was when I get inspired, and that song just popped right in my head, and it was all this conglomerate of ideas. So that's what took a while to finally craft it. But that little moment of inspiration, despite the traumatic time, I tried to turn it around and find the silver lining in that. So the hook, you know, if the sun doesn't shine, tomorrow I'll be fine. That was what I was trying to influence Jill. You know, it's like, I know this is hard to understand, but let's just focus on the big picture, you know. And she's gone through it with flying colors. I'm really proud of her. And it's, what's funny is out of that, we started to consider options. You know, it's like, all right, I have this dream. I've been doing this for a decade now. Should I continue, or should we play on the safer side of caution? You know, and with her support and her family and mine, they were like, no, you need to keep doing this. And because, I mean, bless their hearts, you know, they've had to deal with me dreaming about this for so long. You know, music's all I really talk about anymore. And but they were all really still supportive and pushed me to go on. And it's been awesome. Just, I'm very grateful.
Well, one of the things, the silver lining, if you will, that came out of that opportunity is now she's a part of your band. Your band has grown since the last time we spoke.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been really, I still can't even fathom it, you know. Uh-huh. Just the fact that I have this group now and we all get along and everyone has their different influences, but at the end of the day, we still come together and we have a good time. And yeah, so Jill and my sister Rachel are going to join us as background singers. And we have Bruce Bennett on bass, Rick Ryder on keys, Zach Quam on drums. He's returning.
There we go.
And Al Halpin.
Remember Al? Yeah.
And we call him Big A.
Big A.
Big A. And then we have Greg Stein on guitar as well. And we have some side projects we've been working on for a long, long time. And
you and Al?
Greg and I.
Greg and you.
Uh-huh. Yeah. But Al and I, we also have an EP coming out.
Oh, another one.
This year.
You're very busy.
Yeah, it's been really fruitful. And that was a collaborative project, which was really exciting. So we recorded that at East Hall Recording in Fayetteville. Mm-hmm. And then Garrett Jones took the helm and produced it and helped us derive at a sound that we thought was representative of what we were trying to do. And once we crafted that, we went to Darren Crisp in Fayetteville, Crisp Recording, and he mixed and mastered that project. So really excited to share that. That's my passion project, and it's just awesome to be able to have these options and not put all my eggs in one basket.
How fun. That must be really fulfilling creatively.
Oh my gosh, yes. Because, you know, in the beginning, I didn't have any pie in the sky dreams of being a performer. I was really just focused on creating and writing and, you know, but opportunities presented itself and I ran with it. And so getting a chance to take a step back and get to where I all started in the beginning, it almost feels like I'm starting over in a way, you know. And I learned a lot and grew from all the experiences that's led up to this point. And so I'm really grateful to be able to be in this area and get to fall sometimes and not, you know, have that be a monkey on my back. You know, everybody in this area has been really awesome and helped me stay humble. And it's just really cool. I just can't even put my finger on it, you know. I'm just really happy and thankful.
Well, congratulations. We're happy for you.
Thank you.
So the new 4-song EP that comes out on the 16th, there are some celebrations, some release shows that people can attend. How can they participate?
Right. So on July 11th, it's a Sunday from 4 to 6, Neil at Haxton has been gracious to open his doors, and we invite anybody and everybody to come in, have a first listen at the new album. Let's get some feedback. Maybe I have a chance to talk about the process of making it. And we're also going to do a special performance at the end, a live recording. And if people want to stay and see that, that'd be cool. It's definitely welcomed. And then the album comes out on July 16th, the following Friday. And we're still planning a release event for that.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to stay tuned, check out my Facebook at Pat Ryan Key or patryankey.com on my website, and definitely have news on that very soon.
Excellent. Well, it's been really, really fun watching your career, because I think we can call it a career now, this journey that you've been on, develop over the past several years. And thank you for letting us be a part of it. And we look forward to what comes next.
Oh, well, the pleasure is all mine. I really appreciate all the sentiment and love, and still connected after all this time back in high school.
I know. Well, before we let you go today, can we hear a couple of songs?
Well, I suppose.
You suppose.
Yeah.
We appreciate it.
All right, thanks. This is called Messed Up. And for the record, it's not a true story. Well, I know, baby, you say it too. You gave me all your love, your played it true. I blame myself, you know. Well, I messed up. Losing you, living lost, and you lose it all. Your love burns low. It's my fault. Yeah, give them all my love, and losing my love. Well, I messed up. Well, I messed up. Well, I messed up. Losing you. I'm broken heart. Times two. Missing you. To complain, I've had enough. No need to explain, we've had enough. Ooh. Well, I know, baby, you say it too. Your love burns low. It's my fault. Well, I messed up. Well, I messed up. Well, I messed up.
hard times too. I'm missing you.
This next song is called How About It.
You wouldn't believe it if I told you an angel graced my view. Time when I was done, so gone, I flew with the wind. Yeah, working not to grow. That's where my heart froze up. Blue, black, and green, blonde hair, chilling at the bar. How'd you know when I get down with me? Now you know when I get down with me. How'd you know when I get down with me? How about we stop right now? Well, hey, baby, I love ya. I promise you no harm. Yeah, you take good care of me. How you love me. There's no one who loves you more than me. And you know when to get down with me. How'd you know when to get down with me? How'd you know when to get down with me? How about we stop right now?
That was Pat Ryan Key performing inside the Green Room of Meteor Guitar Gallery in Bentonville last week. More information about his new album and upcoming performances is available at patryankey.com.
Support for KUAF comes from Woodstone Pizza, located on South School Avenue and Uptown on Mall Avenue in Fayetteville. Wood-fired pizzas, salads, local beers, and wines are available for dine-in and curbside from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. Tuesday through Sunday. WoodstoneCraftPizza.com for menus and more.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda, and joining me now from her office in Bella Vista is Becca Martin-Brown, features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. How are you?
Hey, you. One of these days, I'll actually get to see everybody again.
I know, in person.
Instead of being stuck in the wilds of Bella Vista. But if you are at the point where you're getting out in the world again, holy cow, have we got plenty to talk about.
Oh, I'm excited. Let's hear it.
So much going on. Well, I got to see Matilda the Musical Saturday.
How was it?
It's fabulous. And they're doing it at the Fayetteville Public Library in the new event space, which makes a really fine theater.
Excellent.
The acoustics are great. The seats are okay. It was good. And the show's a lot of fun. It's not what you expect if you say children's musical.
Okay.
There's a little bit of Annie in it. Kid gets rejected by family, terrorized at school. Somebody comes along and rescues her.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a lot of fun. And it's been extended through July 25th. So get yourself in order, 7:30 Tuesday through Friday, 2 and 7:30 Saturday, and 6 o'clock on Sundays. Weird time, but it's because the Fayetteville Public Library is also doing the Mountain Street Stage Music Series.
Oh, yes, yes. Lots of programming going on now that they're open.
And it's so fun. Tickets for the musical are $34 to $54 at theater2.org. Tomorrow is the Firefly Fling.
Already? Oh, wow.
Yeah.
It is July.
The Botanical Garden of the Ozarks probably did not know when they started this more than 10 years ago that it would attract like 4,000 visitors every year. So it made it even harder to cancel it last year, like so many other things. This year, they're back with a whole new idea. It comes in two chunks.
Okay.
There's a 9 a.m. to noon chunk.
Okay.
For families with younger kids.
Yeah, I like this. Okay.
And a 7 to 10 p.m. chunk tomorrow for families with older kids, people on date night. And the programming is going to be a little bit different. The early programming will be focused on younger kids. Drum Safari is going to play. Barnyard Buddies will have a petting zoo and pony rides. The Community Creative Center will be there doing face painting. Amazium will be making mandalas with the kids.
Oh, fine.
There'll be giant bubbles and fairy gardens. And then from 7 to 10... they'll have performers like Rochelle Bradshaw and Hypnotion and Ashton Barbary, and they'll have a flower truck on site to help people create flower crowns.
Oh, I love that.
And they'll have food trucks both times of day. Go right now to 750-2620. Don't go right now. I always get in trouble for saying that. Go as soon as we get done. And make your reservation at 750-2620. Tickets are $4 to $15. If that happens to have sold out, you can go to the River Valley.
And what's there?
An event called Local Color Radio Hour.
Oh.
It's a fundraiser for the Fort Smith Museum of History. It's a radio variety show that they're doing outside this year. And it's going to have some music, and it's going to have some comedy, and it's going to have some segments with Carolyn Spear, who is the director of the museum, that's sort of like Mysteries at the Museum, to encourage people to visit the museum. The headliner is the Boss Tweeds.
Oh, they're fun.
And all this happens at Harry E. Kelly Riverfront Amphitheater. So it's a party. And there'll also be radio style old school advertising for some of the sponsors.
Yes, I do love that.
And the sponsor list includes Taliano's, which I didn't know was still in business. It's the best Italian food I've ever had, and we need to go there sometime.
Yes, we do.
Oh my gosh, it's good. And all of this starts with gates opening at 6 o'clock tomorrow. The show starts at 7, and tickets are $5 to $15. You can bring your lawn chairs, and they'll have food trucks and Kona Ice available. And then it's music, 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 music. Sons of Brazil. Saturday is part of the Forest Concert Series at Crystal Bridges. Shows at 7, tickets are $12. Members only tonight, and Thanks for Nothing tomorrow night at the Butterfield Stage in the new Rail Yard Park in Rogers.
Mm-hmm.
The Boss Tweeds are also at the Mountain Street Stage at the library on Sunday.
Busy weekend for them.
Which is where you'll find me with my kiddo. The Austin Farnham Quartet will perform July 13th as part of the Terrific Tuesday Nights at the Botanical Garden of the Ozarks. And Mixtapes will perform Thursday as part of the Gully Park Concert Series.
Oh, they're always a fun time.
And there's a whole big... Jocelyn Murphy's doing a whole different format of live music for us. You can find out everything you want to know in Sunday's What's Up in the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Oh, yeah, and we have this little spatial thing. Mm-hmm. It's a whole edition devoted to Crystal Bridges about to turn 10.
I know. Can you believe it's been 10 years?
No. It's that we're still as young as we were 10 years ago.
We still are. We still are.
But check it out Sunday if you want to know anything about Crystal Bridges. I hope we hit it. We tried.
I'm sure that's great. I'll have to pick that up and read that. And that's then go it. Check out the art.
I hope that's enough to keep you busy until I see you again.
Oh, it's plenty. Thank you as always, Becca.
See you soon.
Becca Martin Brown is features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. This is 91.3 FM KUAF in Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Siloam Springs, a listener-supported service of the University of Arkansas. And before we wrap up today's show, there's one last piece of news to share. After 12 years, today is my last day at KUAF. But I'm excited to announce I've accepted a position as editor-in-chief of Arkansas Soul, a nonprofit digital media organization creating content by, for, and about Black, Indigenous, and people of color in Arkansas. I'm thrilled to continue serving my community as a journalist, and I'm so pleased that I get to expand my storytelling to the entire state, and that I'll be able to share stories through a variety of media, including audio, video, and print. It has been an honor and a privilege that so many of you have shared your stories with me and welcomed me into your cars, homes, offices, and wherever else you've tuned in. I feel incredibly blessed to have met so many wonderful and passionate people that genuinely want to do good. Your kindness has continually renewed my faith in humanity and given me hope. Thank you to the hundreds of people who have come into the studio or spoken with me over the phone or on Zoom over the last year. It's a huge act of faith to share intimate personal stories with a complete stranger, and I have been in constant awe of that trust for over a decade. It's humbling, honestly, and I do not take this trust lightly. I promise to continue handling your stories with care, always being mindful of maintaining your dignity and authenticity while sharing those stories with our audience. I'm always up for an adventure, and a career in journalism has provided me with a wide array of experiences. I've made friends with a 500-pound boar, chased wild waterfalls, ziplined through the canopy of the Ozarks, and watched men build part of a castle by hand. I've enjoyed having people share their talents with me, and I have a special place in my heart for all the musicians I've met. Large concerts aren't quite the same once you've had artists perform for you as an audience of one. I cherish both the quiet and the loud personal concerts I've recorded over the years, and if I didn't tell you before, these are some of my most cherished memories. Some of my greatest joys have been the times when the simple act of sharing your stories has led to connections within the community among folks who can do good work for other groups of people. Perhaps most of all, I've loved giving voice to the voiceless, people who are not often heard from, as well as those who feel they don't have a story to tell, or maybe just one that anyone would listen to. I plan to continue that work on my next adventure, and you're more than welcome to follow along at ar.soul.com. And even if this is where we part ways, thank you again for being a part of this chapter of my life. Thank you for listening and for caring, and please always remember to support the people and causes you believe in. And just in case no one has told you, you matter and your stories matter, always. And if you'll indulge me for one moment more, I'd like to end today's show with a little George Strait. When I was a kid, I remember listening to the radio one time when a DJ announced it was his last day and this was the song he wanted to go out on. I never could have imagined that I would have found myself in a similar situation, but now that I have, I'd like to carry on the tradition. Thanks again for the memories, and I hope we'll see each other again soon. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Thanks as always for listening, and I hope you have a fantastic weekend. As the credits roll, a sad song starts.